Here we go. Welcome to the program. Kicking off another week on Hockey Central. Jeff Merrick alongside Brian Burke and Anthony Stewart. Sam Cosentino, our lead draft analyst and observer of all things prospect and CHL. Sam Cosentino joins us here in a couple of moments. We'll play some clips that we heard over the weekend on the 31 Thoughts podcast with Kings general manager Rob Blake and Ottawa Senators general manager Pierre Dorion. In the meantime, we have lots to get to today. This is going to be a busy week. We'll hear plenty about Hub City announcements, deals on return to play protocol, a lot on phase three. In the meantime, Brian, we'll start with you, and I think I already know the answer to this. Are you on team placeholder?
No.
Okay, pause on that. Anthony Stewart, are you on team placeholder?
Yes.
Okay, we have a show. Very good. Brian, we'll start with you. And I know that you weren't a fan. I know you're not necessarily a fan to begin with of the lottery, including too many teams. But then when you throw the wild card of mystery team in there, I would imagine it took more than just a couple of Tylenols to get rid of your headache on Friday, true or false?
True. But I want people to understand, they're getting tired of the rant, I think, so I'll calm down a little bit. My objection is to the whole point of having a lottery, which is to reduce the temptation to tank. So I support a lottery, okay? So we start with the draft, inverse order of selection, worst team picks first, they get the most help. Then teams mess it up, they tanked. In all sports where you could do it, so they put in a lottery. My view is that this evil of tanking, you should use the smallest Band-Aid you can come up with to solve it. And I think in a typical year, it should be five teams in the lottery and not every non-playoff team. You should have teams jumping over teams with 10 points, 12 points, 15 points. It could be 30 points this year where Detroit, where they were at the pause, where a team was on pace for, they were on pace for 60 max, and there's teams on pace for 115. Yeah. And one of them might pick ahead of them. That's not what the draft was designed for. That's not what the lottery was designed to cure. It's a bad result. Is it good TV? Yeah. If you're not a sophisticated hockey fan, this looks great. It's exciting, right? But if you're a sophisticated hockey fan, this is not equitable or fair.
Stewie, I guess I'm a slob. What are you?
I'm a slob as well, but Burke touched on a good point mentioning that, yeah, it's good. It adds excitement for the league right now. We've been off for about probably 3 months now, and it's generating a lot of headlines. So I know that's not the end-all be-all, but that's a big aspect of it now. But what I'm thinking this does now, it rewards these teams now that had to scratch and claw for the last little bit and have the GMs now build their rosters from within, build their rosters from the farm. And I would like to see a team like Pittsburgh get rewarded now, who's had some injury problems over the last couple of years, or even Winnipeg, who had their blue line decimated in the last calendar year. So I would love to see a team like that who has to go and build their rosters the hard way, get rewarded with one of these franchise players. And I know Burke is going to say Pittsburgh has Crosby and Malkin, but you know they're on the back nine here now. They can continue their success well, and I want to see these guys get rewarded for doing things the right way.
Yeah, they've got three cups. Let's reward them. They won Sidney Crosby. I was standing right there in the ultimate lottery in 2005. I don't buy that argument at all. If you want excitement, they can hire some dancing girls or something else.
Do you think, Brian, because I really want to drill down a little bit more on this idea of discouraging tanking. And we've seen it in recent history, the Buffalo Sabres, as they tried to get Connor McDavid, every time a goaltender had the nerve to make a save, he got traded. If you want to go way back, Eddie Johnson with the Pittsburgh Penguins. Let's bring up everybody from Baltimore. We want Lemieux. We don't want Mueller. Do you think what the Red Wings did this season was tanking?
No, not one bit. I think it's insulting to say. I think they're just going through. This is a team that was in the playoffs for 25 straight years. And so to me, they're going to have a down cycle. They're on the down cycle. They hung in there with their coach. They put some good young players in who are going to get better. But no, I don't think they tanked at all. And okay, let's say they did. So they got the chance they have. So they got the odds they have. It should have been the seven non-participating teams. And at that point, Detroit's got a 20% chance maybe out of the seven teams or eight teams. If it was only seven, mm-hmm. So their weighting would have been less than 20%. So you're going to tank for a 16, 17% chance at the top player? Doesn't make any sense. And you know how hard it is to tank?
Yeah.
You have to tank at the GM level. You can't tank at the coach level. Because the minute a coach says to a player, we can't win, that player's going public with it. If he doesn't punch him.
Yeah.
Like, can you imagine Claude Julien going into Shea Weber and saying, we got a shot at Lafreniere if we lose, so let's not play hard. Shea Weber's going to punch him. He's not just going to defy him. He's going to punch him and go public with it. So it's got to be, like you say, at the management level where you move guys who could make you successful. But the fans and media smell that right away, too. Like, it's just, you want to sell season tickets. You want to build confidence. Tanking isn't the way to do it. And all you should get if you do tank is a 20% chance at that player maximum, or a 25% chance at that player. And then it's really, you got to think hard about tanking. I will tell you this. When my teams that missed the playoffs were eliminated, I had a meeting with the team. I said, okay, here's your job for the rest of the year. We're officially out of the playoffs. Here is your job description for the balance of the year. We're going to try to win as many games as we can, forget the draft pick, and we are going to try to disrupt as many other teams' chances for the playoffs as we can. We're going to beat as many teams as we can, and we're going to beat up as many teams as we can. And we're going to try to be a factor in the playoff race. That's what my players were told. It was never, hey, let's see what we can do about a draft pick. So to me, I think this is a travesty, but it's happened. Let's stop ranting about it and move on.
Yeah, but quickly here, Jeff, I think now with, you know, this is not like the other four major sports, you know, in North America. One player can't necessarily turn around an entire franchise. We're looking at Connor McDavid now, who's at Edmonton, where if we're going by those standards, they should have 2-3 Stanley Cups. So you need to have good drafting, not just in your first round. You got to find gems that are going to be, you know, 400 or 500 game players in your, you know, fourth, fifth round here. Guys, and the organizations that are doing that, they're finding these gems, going above and beyond, you know, with their scouting departments, finding these gems. Those are the teams that have success.
I agree, Stewie, but we're just talking about the draft lottery. And to me, the NHL gets so much right. They do almost everything right. This is one to me, this and team travel, the schedule, are two things where I'm like, how can they get two such important items so wrong? And people say to me, oh, it's just, you're on an island here. You're on an island. No one cares. I'm not on an island. My phone blew up the other night with GMs and coaches and people that agree with me, but aren't going to come out and say it. And I'm not certainly not going to divulge who they were. And even if I am on an island, you guys know this. I'm happy to be on an island if I believe I'm right. This isn't fair. A team that would be on pace for 100 points is going to get Alexis Lafreniere, could get Alexis Lafreniere. How is that fair?
But isn't that a criticism, though? We've got Sam Cousins here standing by. I want to pick up the conversation, but isn't that a criticism more of the play-in round than the lottery? I want to get into that conversation a little bit later on. Let's get Sam Cosentino on. He's been waiting patiently, and we thank him for that. Our lead draft analyst on SportsNet is Sam Cosentino. His rankings are available right now at sportsnet.ca. Sammy, first of all, thanks for joining us today. And second, listen, team placeholder, whomever that is going to be, is going to end up with Alexis Lafreniere. But as you've had a weekend now to digest what we saw on Friday, and you know these prospects better than anybody, and you have probably a really good indication or a good idea of where they're all going to slot. When you look at Friday night, if we can couch this in winners and losers, who won Friday?
Just talked to Eric Engels a couple of minutes ago, and he said the one thing that we might have all missed out on is probably the big winner is Alexis Lafreniere. Berkey just said it. He's got a chance to go to a 100-point team and be a contender for a Stanley Cup in his first year.
Be quiet, Sam.
So he's the big winner in all this, for sure, because the possibilities become endless. I mean, is he going to end up playing for Montreal? What an unbelievable story that would be. If it's Toronto, if it's Pittsburgh beside Crosby. So he's the biggest winner in all of this. And then, of course, one of those eight teams is going to be the huge winner. But I look at it on a couple of different levels. I do think it's unfair that a potential 100-point team is going to have a chance to get this guy. But I also don't feel too bad about teams that are mismanaged. Like, how can anyone feel bad for Buffalo? It's been a disastrous and a continuous amount of mismanagement there. So, okay. Yeah, you're going to get him a good player, so what? So Jack Eichel, 3 years down the road, can complain that he doesn't like it there and they haven't won? Well, he's not really wrong. So, you know, there's reward for running your franchise in such a poor fashion. I don't know. get a good player so that he asks out. So I look at it on the flip side of that, from a pure PR perspective for the league, it's a home run. You've got every fan base that continues to be engaged because they're waiting for the second phase of the lottery. You have another event which you can put on TV in sort of the way that we did it the other night, and you might be able to do it a little bit better based on what the restrictions are for production and getting into a building and trying to do it more in a TV style. So you have that event to sit on. And then, of course, that's going to be another lead up, and it's going to pump up the draft even more, regardless of whether it's virtual or it's in some sort of 25% capacity arena, whatever the case might be. So all of those events have now are going to garner huge PR for the league, and every fan base is engaged.
Well, thanks for coming on, Sam. It was nice to have you on the show.
Berkey. Gotta love it, eh? Gotta love it. But I just don't believe that the teams that are continuously mismanaged. Now, Detroit, do you feel bad for Detroit because, you know, they had that huge run and now they're in a downturn? Well, you know, they made a change at general manager for that reason. They expected this to happen. You know, they kind of went off the board a little bit with Seider last year, a little earlier than many people expected. I think they're going to be ecstatic because I strongly believe that Cole Perfetti is the guy that they probably wanted off the hop. And if they had the chance to pick number one, I don't think you could have done it there, or even two and three for that matter. But at four, I think Cole Perfetti's a real good fit for them there. And there's a whole bunch of reasons as to why he and Detroit are such a good fit. So they're okay. New Jersey, again, a bit of a downturn, but you have, you know, by all accounts, you know, a general manager who's really not in place yet, who's done all this work, who's interviewing coaches, and he's still, is he really the GM or not? I mean, you gotta sort stuff out. And I feel a little bit bad for LA because they had a pretty good run. They were probably a year behind getting younger. And same thing with Anaheim, a perennial contender, who maybe waited a year before they started to introduce their young guys, but they got a lot of good guys coming too, and so does LA. They're not going to be down there for very long. Buffalo, who knows? Mm. So, you know, you can kind of assess it by each team, but at the end of the day, I do agree with the assessment that a 100-point team shouldn't have the chance at the number one overall pick. On the flip side of that, I say manage your team better and get put yourself in a position so that you're not in that position to be one of those lottery teams.
Stewie.
Sam, so who do you think LA takes at number two? For me, it's a no-brainer with Quinton Byfield, big, strong center. You know, that's how the West used to be. And for me, I think the one knock is his performance at the World Juniors, where I think that's just one piece of the pie when evaluating prospects. I was watching my World Juniors on TV recently, and I just saw that Malkin was playing. I don't even remember him playing. So there was a lot of knock on his World Juniors, but just talk about how tough it is for an underager player that hasn't been drafted playing in World Juniors and being judged a lot based on that when they're doing your assessment.
Yeah, you can't use that. It's a small piece to the puzzle. He's 10 months younger than Lafreniere, so I don't even look at Quinton Byfield's experience at the World Juniors. But I know this year, if he gets a chance of playing it, he's going to light it up, so I'm not concerned there. As far as LA goes, I think they take Tim Stützle, to be honest with you. And I think they like the fact that here in each of the last 3 years, they've taken centers. They have a guy who has that versatility, who showed that he can play against men on the wing, but also at the World Juniors showed that he could play center. You can never have enough depth at that position. And the thing is, your other prospects that other people have been able to see may be more coveted. You need to get them into the NHL, though, and get them some games so that people realize that, hey, if they want to go after one of their young centers, then they can do so. But I look at a guy who's probably a little bit more polished than Byfield. The one thing I'll say about Quinton, though, he is like, there's so much growth potential there with this player. At 6'4", 215, I think we've just scratched the surface of what you're going to see him play at. I think he plays at 225 or 230. I think he has to mature a little bit and add some bite and some meanness to his game. Not that he has to always be the aggressor or the initiator, but a guy who people are going to be afraid to go around. That when they have to go into a corner or in the net front with this guy, that they're going to be pissed that they have to be in a battle with this player. I think he needs a little bit more of that. I think he needs the length in his stick so that his 6'4 can actually play the 6'4 as maybe playing hunched over a little bit as a 6'2 guy. But I love the player, and I love the growth potential that he has to offer. I think Stützle at this point is a more polished player, and I think he goes too.
That's an interesting comment, too, about the stick length for Quinton Byfield. Get him with Adam Oates for like 2 weeks, and Adam will change the lie, change everything, stick length, and Byfield will look like a different player. You mentioned Cole Perfetti a couple of moments ago, and that he looks to be a hand-to-glove fit with the Detroit Red Wings. Cole Perfetti, for those that don't know, plays with the Saginaw Spirit of the OHL. Why do you draw a line between that player and that team, Sam?
Well, Saginaw part ownership is Jim Devolano, who's obviously very high up in the Red Wings organization, a very successful hockey guy for 100 years. Chris Osgood is also part of that. Steve Yzerman and Chris Osgood played together. They're an hour away from each other, so you could have had multiple viewings, multiple meetings with this player, and have done more due diligence on Cole Perfetti than anyone else. I mean, even his billets, the Bordeaux family, are really good friends with a lot of the old dynasty Detroit Red Wings. So I continue to draw those lines. He works out with Pete Renzetti in the offseason, who was Chris Draper's personal trainer during his time playing. And so there's so many things that they know about the player that maybe others don't, that I think they'd be supremely comfortable taking him there. And it's not a stretch at number four. I've had him a little bit further down on my list all year long. But when I saw Detroit go four, I thought, there's the guy for the team. That's a really good fit. Now, is it going to happen? Obviously, we have to wait and see. But I think there's too many lines there and too much knowledge of the player not to go down that road. And let's not forget, this guy finished second in the Ontario Hockey League in scoring. He was downright pissed off when he got cut from Canada's World Junior team and lit it up, had points in 30 of 32 games down the stretch after he got cut, was absolutely brilliant. And his brain, his ability to read feet, to read the play, is like few other in this draft. I put him right up there with Lafreniere in terms of his hockey brain, his ability to process the play and execute the play in a short amount of time. And that's why I think he's going to be a real good player in the NHL.
And Sammy, Steve Yzerman doesn't care if it's two picks too early for someone like Cole Perfetti. We saw that last year with Moritz Seider.
Yep. He just
flat out doesn't care. Berkey.
Leaving individual players aside, Sammy, there's some interesting trends in this draft. There's lots of different positional players in the first round. CHL has a bounce back year. USNDTP falls off a little bit. But the big trend for me is the Germans are coming. The Germans are coming.
No doubt. And, you know, that goes to coaching. That goes to what happened in your minor programs. That speaks to, German players wanting to stay at home and play in Germany as opposed to taking their act elsewhere to go play, whether it be over here in Canada or in the USHL or whatever the case is. And that's a difficult thing to do because everyone has that dream of playing in the National Hockey League, and they all think that path is to be taken through North America. But when I look at Mo Sider and I look at Tim Stützle, what I think about is a Mannheim program that's got all kinds of resources. Their schedule allows you for similar type training to NCAA where you're not game heavy and you're able to practice and do all your things off ice, so to continue your development in that mode. And then when you get into the playing mode, you're playing against men, as Paterka did, as Reichel did, and they're showing that they have the ability to do that. Now, is it the best league in the world? No, but it's still a really good league. People are comfortable there, especially if you're from Germany. And so I think there's a lot of value in some of those playing, staying where they are. And Berkey, you'd know this. If you talk to the guys that went over and had a significant number of years in Germany, they absolutely loved it. They loved the lifestyle. They loved the style in terms of games to practice ratio. And so why shouldn't that be the same case for these younger players as well?
Yeah, the one thing they've got to change is the amount of imports they allow. They're too heavy on imports. The Swiss teams have allowed fewer, and they've come farther for a smaller country. Mm-hmm. But as great as the Germans have done, and we had a friendship agreement with Mannheim when I ran the Leafs. It is a first-rate outfit. I'll tell you a story what they do in Mannheim. They go to the kindergartens in Mannheim, and they have the boys jump, do a vertical leap, and do a couple other little tests. Kindergartners. I'm not making this up. And the best athletes, they will approach the parents and say, we'll give your kid the equipment, we'll waive any minor league or minor hockey dues, and we'll put your kid in the program. So they're identifying top athletes at 5 years old. Unbelievable.
Oh, you're seeing Dominic Bach, Sider, Dreisaitl, these three guys that I think will all go in the first round. It's working.
Stewie?
Ottawa has three first rounders, seven picks in the first two rounds, if I'm not mistaken here. Do you see them flipping a couple of those picks to improve the roster and sort of fast track this rebuild they're in?
That's an interesting question, Stewie, because is it the picks that are going to give you more value, or is it those guys that have already played NHL games? The Bathursons, the Formantons, the Brandstroms. So that's the debate more left for the GM type, for the other guy on the line here. But I do think that there's more value when you've had players that played NHL games that are knocking on the doorstep. However, are those guys untouchable? Do you want to give up on them? You've worked so hard to bring them where they are. I think they have more value than what the picks have. But in terms of 3 and 5, I think those are untouchables. You can address a centerman and a defenseman and a really good one in each spot there. And so that just adds to their prospect pool, and that gives them more options as to those players would be coveted anyway, Stu, being picked that high. So it's not like you're giving up the pick so someone's going to take a surprise player at 3 or at 5. I do think they keep those two for sure, and then it's all bets are off after that. But you have to remember, number of contracts, number of prospects they have in their system, how many prospects do you want to have for the next year and a half, and where the heck are they all going to play? So that has to be taken into consideration as well. But I believe in the accumulation of assets, and I think this is the best way to do it for Ottawa. And it's hard to knock what Pierre Dorion's done to this point, although the NHL team has to start winning games at some point here pretty soon.
You've talked about addressing positional needs for the Ottawa Senators. Safe to say that at 3, they're just going to take whomever team placeholder and the Los Angeles Kings don't. So that's either going to be Byfield or it's going to be Stützle. With number five, Ottawa really needs to make a pick. If they're going the defenseman route, where is Sam Cosentino at in the Jamie Drysdale Erie Otters versus Jake Sanderson United States Development Program, who's the son of former NHLer Jeff Sanderson?
That race is so close right now, but I now am giving a slight edge to Sanderson. A, you always like it when that player has some NHL experience or NHL background. He's a little bigger. He plays with more bite. He can defend with physicality, where Jamie can't do that yet. Jamie defends with a good brain, a really good head. His ability to process the game and make that good first pass or execute the breakout, depending on what needs to happen, he's brilliant at doing that. And he plays with so much poise. I mean, I absolutely love him. But the fact that I think Sanderson, with his size and a little bit more grit in the NHL background, he may have just passed him. But I will say this, at 5, I'm pretty confident that they're going to go with one of those two guys.
Berkey?
Okay, Benedict, at what point do the headaches start for the goaltenders, for the GMs? At what point do you start getting a headache thinking about passing on the goaltender? There's one elite goaltender in this draft in the first round.
Yeah, for me, it's 10. There's too many good players that I think can have an impact a lot sooner than what your goaltender can have. I think the goaltender is more suited for a team that takes the critical path of what we've seen Washington do with Samsonov, what we watched Tampa do with Vasilevsky, allow them to kind of finish out their contracts, play where they're comfortable in the KHL, mature both physically and mentally, turn into an adult, if you will, then allow them some time to come over to the American Hockey League to adjust to the ice, the angles, the play, so on and so forth, and then start giving them some time as a backup. And then 5 years down the road, you're looking at that guy coming in, like Samsonov, who may very well in the next year or two take the place of Braden Holtby. And Holtby either becomes an asset for you, or you let him go as a free agent and you become cheaper at that position. So I would think that a team that can use that critical path with someone that they're really happy with in goal and will be for the next couple of years is a team better suited to take a goalie there.
Tell us about the goaltender. Just our listeners might not know who this goalie is, the Russian.
Yeah, so he's 6'2", 6'3", but he's he's so skinny his eyes are single file. He's like 160, 165 pounds, but supremely athletic, plays kind of a hybrid style where he can come out and challenge and play stand-up. He's a right-catching guy, so that always creates a little bit of interest. And the fact that he's had such a great international resume kind of wipes out what he did at the World Juniors, like Stu, we were talking about with Byfield before. Even tougher when you're a goaltender, I think, in that position at that age. So I think he's played in 6 or 7 international events as one of the key guys. I mean, he was a starter for Russia this year, won a medal in all of those events, sick numbers in the VHL, which is the AHL equivalent over there. So there's a lot to this guy's resume that speaks NHL starting goaltender.
Yaroslav Askarov, by the way, is the goaltender's name that Sam and Berkey are talking about. Okay, finish the story here for us. In a dream scenario, okay, where does Alexei Lafreniere end up?
Montreal, for everybody. I think for everybody. For Montreal and some of the woes they've had, it might take some of the heat off Berge over there in Montreal. You get a guy who speaks the language, who's whatever, half hour, 40 minutes from home. I think he's the type of player that they need in terms of just adding a little bit more size than what they have currently in their lineup. And I think for the league, an original six team that can kind of get back into contention based on what they've done, what they've got coming, and, of course, the addition of a guy who I think can have an impact here right away.
Perfect. You're the best, Sammy. Thanks, as always, for stopping by. Sammy's list available, draft rankings, the latest ones available at sportsnet.ca. Thanks, Sammy.
All right, thanks. Take care, guys.
There he is. Very thorough. He's the finest. Sam Cosentino, our lead draft analyst. And you can watch him as part of our CHL coverage on a weekly basis. And if there was a Memorial Cup this year in Kelowna, he would have been front and center. We'll step away. We'll come back and we'll hear some clips from Rob Blake and Pierre Dorion. The Kings will select second overall, the Ottawa Senators third and fifth. Hockey Central continues. This is Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Welcome back to the program here Monday to Friday, starting at noon. Jeff Merrick alongside Brian Burke and Anthony Stewart. Hub City announcements. I want to get to some of these clips here from a couple of general managers, guys. But first, I want to get into the conversation about Hub Cities. And again, if we have this conversation 10 minutes from now, it might sound completely different. That's how fluid this thing is. But the very latest that we're hearing, Vegas, despite the most recent spike, which has caused some misgivings from some people. Vegas and Toronto look like the likeliest destinations. An announcement perhaps as early as today, maybe tomorrow. May have an NHL / Players Association deal on the return tomorrow. It should be a very busy couple of days around the NHL. But Berkey, we'll start with you on the idea of the hub city. Favorites right now, and again, this time last week we were talking about Vancouver, are Toronto and Vegas.
Yeah, that's all the intel I've got is it's going to be those two. It's not done. Toronto saved their bid. They were out of it, but they saved their bid by going with the campus aspect out on the X grounds. I'm not sure how the hotels are going to work, though. There's not enough rooms at that hotel. Mm-hmm. But they've leapfrogged into a new position of... I mean, obviously, you have Coca-Cola Coliseum there, which is a beautiful rink. Practice rink for the Ford Center, which is a practice rink for the Leafs and Marlies, is much closer from there than it is from downtown. There's lots of pluses. I just don't know how they solved the hotel thing. And mm-hmm. I think they could have done a true bubble if they'd been at Scotiabank Arena. They could have truly bubbled the players. I'm not sure how you do it now. But I hear they're the front runner with the Vegas.
Stewie, your thoughts?
Well, I've been to Berkey's house, and I think he could host everybody at his house. It's that big. But, yeah, it's tough now because we had Justin Trudeau, mentioning that they'd love to have one of the Canadian cities be a hub cities. But I think they're just sort of behind the eight ball when it comes to logistics and, quarantine issues like that. So I just can't see how we're going to be able to do it in Canada. I hope it's for our sakes and David Amber's sake to be seeing the players, in and out of the arenas every single day to have it in Toronto. But I just don't see how that can happen just based on, the quarantine issues that we had in Vancouver.
Stewie, as a player, I mean, I'm of the belief that there will be an opt-out option for players through all of this who are uncomfortable, whether it's their health, maybe it's a family member, maybe they take care of an elderly parent, maybe they just don't want to end up with scarred lungs at the end of all of this. Who knows? As a player, how would you feel about this?
As a player now or as a player when I play? When I played, you're when you're young, you're invincible. When you think about these things, you're like, well, it can't happen to me. I'm young and I'm invincible. But when you get older, you start think of these things. So the 20-year-old or the 25-year-old be like, well, you know what? COVID doesn't affect my day-to-day life, so I'm not going to think about it. But if I'm 30 or 33 years old and I have 2, 3, 4 kids and maybe some grandparents that have health issues, I'm definitely thinking twice.
Brian, final bit of business on this one. We've seen the NHL announce that teams have had players test positive. We're seeing it on pretty much a daily basis with Major League Baseball. There's no reason to believe the NHL shouldn't be similar, if not identical, as far as releasing on a semi-regular basis that players have tested positive, correct?
Yeah, I'm expecting more news today or tomorrow about this. So I won't be surprised. The league said long ago one or two positive tests will not derail the process. Baseball right. made the same determination the NBA did, MLS did, the Bundesliga did. I mean, basically they're saying if these guys are healthy athletes and don't have pre-existing conditions, some of them don't suffer at all. The symptoms are almost non-existent. Some of them don't suffer at all. So I think we'll get more information, but I think their approach that one test, two tests shouldn't derail the process. And I do believe that once they get them in the bubble, they can contain this. I really believe that.
Is there the NHL, by the way, is very wise not to release a threshold number, although internally they must have some idea of, okay, if we hit seven on a team, we need to shut that team down and they forfeit their series, right?
Well, that's supposedly, allegedly, that's the hang-up in Vancouver, that the health officer there said, or whatever the appropriate bureaucratic model is, where whoever's in charge, said they wanted a very low number to shut it all down, and it's believed to be five. And, you know, the league just is like, well, no, we're bringing 30 players. Mm-hmm. The key is if you get five positive tests, who are they? If they're both your goaltenders. If it's star players, that's one thing. If it's Brian Burks, that's another. So, yeah. But there is a magic number. I'm confident of that, but they're not divulging it. Also, there's federal law in the states that you can't divulge certain health criteria. It's called HIPAA, the Health Information Protective Act, whatever it is. Yeah. And they can't divulge certain information about player illness.
Right. Okay, so we stand by for that information, as Brian mentions, perhaps today, perhaps tomorrow, but at some point this week. Because, I mean, guys, time is of the element here. Like, just logistically, like, you need to nail down these hub. We were expecting an announcement last week. Now it's a week later, and still it hasn't been made official where the hubs are going to be. All right, to the news that was on the weekend as it related to the NHL draft lottery. Elliot and I had a chance to speak with both Rob Blake and Pierre Dorion. The Los Angeles Kings will select second overall, and the Ottawa Senators will select third and fifth. They do have a third pick, as Stewie mentioned with Sam Cosentino a couple of seconds ago, but that is lottery protected. That's an Islanders pick. And if the Islanders get that chance at it, they're keeping that pick, and that bounces to a first rounder the following season. I'm always curious about this for whoever the team that selects number two is. Here's the general manager of the Los Angeles Kings, Rob Blake, on if they already know in their heads, because when it comes to number two, there's two candidates, Tim Stützle and Quentin Byfield, if they know who they're taking at two. I know you're not going to betray any secrets, and maybe you don't know the answer to this, but I'm going to ask anyway. Do you know who you're taking at number two already?
Yeah, to be honest, no, not at all. Much debate will go in. We obviously had a group in the top few picks there that we have debated internally based off of where we're sitting at fourth. We've run some dry runs and did some things there, but I can honestly say we wouldn't be able to make that decision currently right now.
Someone sent me a note tonight. Your last three picks have been centers: Turcotte, Kupari, and Vilardi.
Right.
And if you look at just the way this is shaped up after Lafreniere, the next two guys are centers. Like, does that matter to you, Rob? Like, do you care?
No, I mean, so you mentioned those three. We'll take four centers like that. You know, no, we firmly believe you build through the middle, you build the D and the goaltender, and currently where we're positioned, we've drafted some centermen, we've acquired some centermen, but that will all play out as it goes, but that doesn't affect kind of what we're looking at.
I do wonder, Brian Burke, the general manager here on the show, is that changing this idea that, you know, it doesn't matter what position the player is at, if that's where you have him slotted. Listen, LA's got three, you know, wonderful centers in the pipeline. If a center is at that spot, you take him, or do you start looking now because players can jump in right away and fill a need? Do you have more so the luxury now of saying, we need a D, we're taking a D, despite the fact that a center slots in at number two?
No, I think you when you draft by position, you incur an awful risk. if you say we really like this guy, but we need a defenseman more, even though we've got a defenseman lower on our chart, we're going to take him. You run a real risk there at this high. Maybe later, if you're picking 10th and you're Detroit and you say you want to take Mo Sider, who most teams had five picks lower, okay, that's fine. But this high, you're going to take the best athlete available. Plus, every GM I've talked to has said, look, if Byfield's not ready at center, he's probably ready at wing. It's like the Beecher kid that Boston drafted. They're not sure where he's going to play. Yeah. They like him as a center, but if he has to start on the wall, it's so much harder to play center in our league that if you take a young player, you can protect him and let him show what he can do on the wall and then move him into the middle later. So, no, I don't think you draft by position. You do not draft by position. You take the best available athlete.
Stewie, the question asked to Rob Blake was, do you have an idea of who you want to take right now? If we go back, with all due respect, 1979, to the best draft of all time, 2003, how much did all you guys know that it was going to go Fleury, Staal, Horton, Jurdev, Vanek? Did you guys know?
We didn't know because Florida actually had the first overall, right? And they flipped with Pittsburgh because we knew Carolina was going to take Staal. But after that, it was pretty much a coin flip. There was a lot of guys that sort of came off the board and were sort of random. You know, no one expected Robert Nielsen maybe to go 15th. No one expected Jeff Carter to fall down to 11 or Kostitsyn being at 10. We knew there was going to be the Coburns, the Hortons, the Jurdevs, the Vaneks. We know those guys at the five top six. But after then, it was a crapshoot. Corey Perry went 28th in that draft. Mike Richards 24th. Wasn't Weber in the second round and as well as Bergeron as well. So it's pretty much a crapshoot. But I think now if I'm LA, I take Byfield, and I've watched some of his games this year, and I see Eric Staal. I remember Eric Staal skating through that neutral zone full speed, going through, splitting that D, scoring, just powering through guys. And say what you want about Eric Staal, he's a power forward. I played with him for a bunch of years. Seeing him in the corners, he reminds me of that. So he could be a franchise center. You're in the West. I'm not sure if the style's changed over the years, but people were salivating over a 6'4 center in that Western Conference. So if I'm LA, I take Byfield and say what you want. I know the German hockey is coming up, but it's nowhere close. I don't think it's close. I don't think they've really closed the gap yet. Say what you want about Draisaitl. He played 2.5 seasons in the WHL. Canadian hockey is where it's at. I go Byfield.
You know, it is interesting. You draw that comparison to Quinton Byfield. When I see him, I think of did you ever get a chance to see Joe Thornton when he played for Sault Ste. Marie? Like, that's
no.
What I see. Just dominating, going through guys, still creative. Like, when I see Byfield play, I'm like, oh, I'm watching Joe Thornton play for the Sioux in 1996 here. Here is Rob Blake. Lance at Master Control. We're going to go to clip three here. This is Rob Blake on preparing for an extended time for this draft.
It's such a weird time right now, Rob, for a lot of reasons. You know that you've got the number two overall pick, and normally, you would know who that player is by now. We'd be drafting that player, just last week. Right. Now you've got to wait another few months. Like, this is just, how do you guys prepare from here? How do you guys go from here in this odd time of life?
Well, I think it narrows the band of players. Like, we were one of the teams, we could go from 1 through 7. Once they finalized the format of the draft lottery, where we were sitting at 4th, we could go from 1 through 7. So that there's a big range of players. And you do your prep and you do your interviews. Now you take it to that second stage and now you narrow down. Now there's a very narrow selection of players, and now you got to dig in and do your homework there. But it also sets up the second round, the third round, the fourth round, and so on. So lots of work to do there. And then the other scenario is whenever the draft will happen, will other leagues be up and playing? Will you get another look at some of the top picks playing, 4 or 5 months after the season pause? So there's a huge growth in maturity and growth in these players over that time. So some of those things are unknown right now, but it sure does narrow down the players that you will be talking to in your discussions going forward.
So here's my question based on that. If we all believe there's a number one, and that's Lafreniere, how many players in you, the Kings' eyes are in the next tier.
I would say we're probably really going to work hard on about four.
Four. Okay.
It depends on, you know, picking at the second pick here. There's some guys that we got to have some serious discussions on going forward there.
You know, that is an interesting point here, Brian. You know, Berkey, this is going to be a long time between viewings, and it's not as if they can physically test these kids either right now. And you know how kids at this age can still have growth spurts. Quentin Byfield, it wouldn't surprise anybody if he ends up showing up at whatever camp next year, not at 6'4", but at 6'5", and not at 215, but 225. How do you factor all of that in when you're making your decision?
Well, I think it's harder. There was no combine, so no one physically tested the players other than Arizona. And they've got to make their evaluations on different things, but they've got more time in the interview process. What five or six GMs have said to me is what they like is the combine, the interviews are 15 minutes and the kids are coached. All the answers are rehearsed.
Yep.
You know, who's your hero? My dad. Yes. 20 kids, my dad.
Yep.
And then, it's just absurd. So what these guys have told me is, yeah, they've got less testing data, but they feel they've got a better feel for the players where they can interview them. And a couple times the kid has said, well, my dad's my hero. I said, well, bring your dad in. I'm told a couple parents and other have walked in on interviews. And they feel like they've gotten a better sense of the kid in a 40-minute Zoom interview or a 50-minute Zoom interview than they do in 15 minutes where the kid walks into a room full of 20 guys with suits on and is terrified but well-coached. So I think it presents its own challenges. The good news is we've got such patient owners that if people do make mistakes due to the COVID-19, that they'll be patient with those mistakes for sure.
Good to see you.
I think on Rob Blake, one interesting thing about LA is that they like Mike Few to go.
Yeah.
And it's peculiar timing. I think Mike Few is one of the great talent evaluators on the planet. Mark Yannetti, who's running their amateur draft the last couple of years, a brilliant guy. His dad was a great scout, too. So I think they're in good hands. But that was one curious thing to change out Mike Few at that point. And I'm sure it had to do with the timing of the expiration of his contract. But that was curious to me. And now they got the second pick. You wonder at some point they're not going to look around the table and wish he was there.
So, Berkey, do you think a lot of these, scouts and people in the scouting department are more expendable now that they're now some organizations are leaning towards analytics as opposed to the eye test?
Yeah, I do, and I think it's a mistake. I think you got to use them both. You know, my view on it's very simple. I've never rejected analytics. I've always found it humorous that there are actually people on this planet who think they can do all their drafting from a computer and from video scouting. I find that very amusing. And I've yet to see a team do it. And in fact, in baseball, the pure analytics model, the guys will tell you, doesn't work. Even the analytics teams still rely a lot on scouting. But the fact of the matter is, I think you're going to see, just based on the revenue models that teams have, you're going to see contraction. Because I've talked about this on the show a bunch of times. There is no way the revenues coming into next year support a flat cap. But that's what's reported we're going to have. That says to me the National Hockey League is well down the road toward a new U.S. television deal. Otherwise, there would have to be a dramatic cutback, which is great news. I'd love to have no cutback, no rollback. Let the players keep their money. They do a 10% deferral. The new TV deal kicks in. Everyone's okay. I hope that's the case. God, I hope that's the case. But in the meantime, until that deal kicks in, teams are facing a massive revenue shortfall. And so you're going to see contraction. Buffalo did it ugly and did it stupid and did it quick and bloody and, you know, it was a red wedding. But teams have quietly been laying people off now, and that will continue because none of these teams are coming back to anything like their revenue model of a year ago.
I'm with you on that one, Berkey. I think everybody was scared to go first and go as deep as Buffalo did. But now that it's been done, I can see other teams doing that exact model. Maybe not to the extent that Buffalo did. Maybe not 20 deep. But I can see it coming from a lot more teams.
It's already started, Jeff. I know guys who have been laid off. It hasn't been publicized. I know guys who have been laid off who have called me and asked for help finding a job. And, you know, can I help them with some GMs that I know and so on? And that's not going to stop. And if we'd had the draft early in June, it would have already happened in a lot of places. But now they've got to keep the staffs intact. For example, if your contract expires June 30th, which is tomorrow, and that's when most scouting contracts do expire, is June 30th, because most teams are on a fiscal year that concludes on June 30th. You would ordinarily have some turnover. Now I'm told that they've gone to their scouts and say, look, your deal's up June 30th. We don't know when the draft's going to be. We'll continue paying you month to month at your monthly rate, and then we'll make a determination after the draft. That's already happened, I've been told. Mm. So, yeah, there's contraction coming. It's not pretty. It's what I keep saying. People, we're not coming back to what we left. We're coming back to something very different. Now, the CBA that includes a flat cap for 2 years, there's no way the revenues support that. So, again, it points to a big television deal. The U.S. deal is up, at the end of this season, I think, or end of next season. Great. That's perfect. But if not, if that deal doesn't materialize, you're going to see some massive rollbacks in salaries.
Let's get a couple more clips in here quick before we hit the break. This is Ottawa Senators general manager Pierre Dorion on something we just kind of talked about there a second ago, drafting best player available or addressing a need instead. Here's Pierre Dorion.
The fact that you're selecting, and you have multiple picks, as we know, in the first round, specifically number three and number five, does that change in any way how you approach those picks? I mean, there's two formulas, right? We're picking for position or we're picking best player available. Does anything change from your scouting book now?
No, but I think you have to look at when you're picking that early in a draft, you have to look at the immediate impact that some players can have. At the end of the day, it's what those players do for you through their career. If they play for you for your whole career, but at the same time, you have to look at their short-term impact, medium-term impact, and what they're going to be as NHL players in the long-term impact. And some players in the top five, even though you're picking in the top five, can develop a bit later, but others can have an impact right away. So obviously with our chief scout, Trent Mann, who's I can't say enough good things about, he's one of the best in the business. I have a scouting background and we have a special chief scout in Trent Mann. We're going to sit down together with our group of scouts and, you know, we've been through multiple scenarios. We knew that we could end up picking five and six. And for us, we feel that we're going to get a really good player that could play for us as early as next year's three, and it could also happen in the case of five.
As Pierre Dorion, the general manager of the Ottawa Senators, you know, if you, Stewie, at the beginning of the season, if you told me that the Ottawa Senators would be drafting third and fifth, I would have said two things. One, tough season for the Ottawa Senators, and two, what the hell happened to the San Jose Sharks? But here we are. Everything is about managing expectations. And although the expectation and the hope Friday was for that first overall pick, and they had a 25% odds of getting it, even though they didn't. I know it feels like it's a consolation, but Stewie, 3-5 is really solid, specifically in this draft.
Can you flip that for the second pick, maybe? Or the first? No?
I would defer to the general manager on the panel here on that one.
Yeah, that's neither here nor there, but let's not feel sorry for Ottawa. They're 3-5. Like, those two players that they get at those numbers there can actually change your organization around it. Let's think, say what you want. I think a lot of Ottawa's problems are off the ice with management and ownership. And when it comes down to actually gameplay, it's the future's actually pretty bright here. So what I think is interesting now with these six or seven picks they have in the first two rounds, this is not going to be a 5-6 year rebuild. This could happen, I think, in the next 2 years, where they can actually have players step in and actually contribute, and they can get back into the playoffs.
What do you think, Berkey?
I agree. I think they've got really good kids. I went and saw Belleville last year, and I think they've got some really good kids, and I like what they're going to get at 3-5 are legit prospects. I don't think game ready. I don't think they'll be ready to play. They'll have to go back to junior or Europe or wherever they go back to. But I agree with Stewie. Pierre Dorion's done a really good job of reloading this on the fly. And I do like their draft position. I do think, though, here when you talk about trading up, so you got 3-5, and can you get to one? And so we see who ends up with number one. And the only temptation would be if that's a team that's a powerhouse, and then I'll really go nuts, a 100-point team. They might say, we don't need the help right now. We don't need Alexis Lafreniere. We wouldn't do it for 3-5. We'll do it for 3-5 and a second. And then But, you know, there hasn't been a huge draft floor deal since the Sedins. It kind of killed that market. There's been a couple smaller deals, but that's a possible deal. And remember, we all love Alexis Lafreniere. He's no question he's going to play. That doesn't mean all 31 GMs feel the same way. They might say, well, I would trade down if I got the first pick. You never know. You never know. So I would wait, see who gets it. If I were Pierre Dorion, then I'd call and say, look, just plant this right now. We know you've got the pick. Is it something you'd entertain? And let's talk further. And the guy might say right away, look, we're taking him, get lost. Or he might say, yeah, let me look at it. And you go into your scouting meetings, the guy says, look, we don't need help right now. We're a pretty good team. We can put in the third pick and the fifth pick and put two top prospects into our system. Let's do that instead.
So, Berkey, how many do you think out of all the 31 teams, how many of those teams do you think would be looking at the option of possibly trading down?
Hang on a second. Hold on to that answer. There's your hook. We got to hit a break. We're heavy on time. That answer from Brian Burke in moments as Hockey Central continues on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. We're back in a flash with Berkey's answer. Okay, Berkey, we built up the drama over the break. The answer to Stewie's question is what?
Well, I could see a couple teams, but I'm not sure they're going to lose. I could see Toronto saying, look, we're pretty close. We're loaded up front. We move down and take a 3 and a 5, get a D in there. I could see Edmonton saying we're top heavy enough if we want to get some depth. But I'm not predicting these teams are going to lose. They would have to lose in the first round to be in this category. Winnipeg, maybe, but less so. Canadian team, I think Lafreniere, you got to look at hard. And I could see the New York Rangers saying, we've got enough high-end forwards. We'd like to drop down and get a center and a defenseman, say. So to me, it's possible. I don't think it's likely.
It's tough. Seldom, if ever, do we see that first overall pick moved. Thanks, gentlemen, and thanks to our guest, Sam Cosentino, kicked off the program today. That's it for Hockey Central. Smith and Jones is up next on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.